Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. The act of eating out while traveling has changed for many. For some, it has always been a chance for celebration, for getting to know a region. Others are just discovering that now. This link between food and travel is called a number of things, but culinary tourism is one of the most common terms these days. Today on the show, we focus on how food and tourism can be mixed together to make a rather powerful recipe for a region and for access to local food. We'll also chat about the pivot toward collaboration instead of competition and its importance in developing the food sector.
Fortunately, you know, from when I initially moved here 8 years ago to now, the mindset on agriculture has changed significantly. Food security was, we'll eventually get there. Well, here we are with the reality of the consumer is now saying, guys, you know, we really don't need lettuce coming from off island at this point. It just doesn't last.
If you're going to be a leader, I'd rather have a team crossing the finish line than just be me by myself, because it's pretty lonely up there being a winner by yourself.
I think the culinary scene in Newfoundland has really taken off. So people are looking for that experience, even when they come to places like Gros Morne.
Next year, we're hoping to be plastic free. So it's digging in and saying, okay, well, what are we using that, you know, is one use, or what can we buy that will last longer than, say, one season? So it's going towards the metal, and that's what customers want. Yeah. You know, they're looking for that, and they will pay that extra dollar if you're putting that effort into it. It's marketable and it's better for the environment.
My guests today work at the intersection of tourism and cuisine. They're entrepreneurs, learning from other regions and building capacity in their own backyards. They create tourism products that highlight the region, the culture, the food. While we talked about culinary tourism in general, we really spent most of our time on community development and how food can revitalize a rural economy. We chatted on a lazy Sunday afternoon in Norris Point, one of the enclave communities within the Gros Morne National Park. Just a warning, some of this discussion may make you hungry.
I'm Rebecca Stone, and we're here in Norris Point, Newfoundland, at the Old Cottage Hospital.
I'm Ian Stone, also in Norris Point.
You folks have been involved in something called Taste of Gros Morne. What does Gros Morne taste like?
Gros Morne has a diverse array of flavors. Mm-hmm. So we range from the land, which is moose, to rabbit, to bear, to the sea, where there's halibut, cod, capelin herring, mackerel, lobster, crab, and more.
Where did this idea for Taste of Gros Morne come from?
It originally started, actually, my wife's passionate about culinary experiences, passionate about food, passionate about local produce, and we travel quite a bit. We just felt that there was a need here, there was a gap, and I really thought that this would be something that Rebecca would really take to. I'm mostly on the business side of things, and she's definitely on the more creative side of things, and the partnership development for sure. We traveled extensively across North America, did a lot of different food tours in different places, and realized there was a bit of a gap here when it came to some of the culinary experiences. And so we decided to partner up with some local operators that we knew. Yeah, that's the rest, I guess, is history.
So how many years ago was this? Was this
3 years ago.
3 years ago, yeah. So what exactly would I, if I use your services, what kind of packages do you provide?
There's a couple of packages out there. The one that most people are familiar with is our progressive food tours. So there's two types. There's one on the north side and one on the south side. So north being Norris Point, Rocky Harbor. Mm-hmm. South side obviously being Woody Point. So we have one that's called the Finer Things Food Tour, which is a four-course progressive food tour. So you start off at the waterfront cat stop, and mm-hmm. you have your first kind of a mousse where you get to have a pairing of Kitty Vitty beer or other locally brewed beers that are available at the time. And that's paired off with some Five Brother cheese. And we also have, I shouldn't forget to put this one in there, it's the charcuterie. So it's the cheese part as well as a Gros Morne Farm and Market, locally sourced mixed greens. And then the third thing that's on the charcuterie is probably the most important, which is homemade beets and mustard pickles from me and my stepmom out of southern Newfoundland. So she's been making it for, oh my God, probably 50 years, and we introduced that this year as well. So that's the first part of the tour, and then you head on over to Nettie's Harbor Inn at the Black Spruce Restaurant, and we get to enjoy some homemade seafood chowder and as well as some mussels. Again, it changes from year to year depending on what's on their menu, but that's what we've had, and that pairs off with the Canadian wine, a Pinot LeBlanc from British Columbia. We then go on and do the third course up at Sugar Hill Inn, and the main course is in the Chanterelle's restaurant, where we let the chef do his thing. So it's market fish, whatever he decides to be creative with. It's ranged from cod to halibut, with Chanterelle risotto to who knows what, homemade pestos and sauces, and of course, a really nice wine. And then we go over to the Rocky Harbor side for the sunset and dessert at the Ocean View Hotel, where we get to have some Prosecco from Italy and some homemade cheesecake with Newfoundland Wallberry. And that's just one tour.
Right, yes.
And then the other one is over on the south side. And that one starts either over here with a water taxi shuttle over, or you can meet us from the south side. And then you start off at the Bombay Inn, where you get to have some homemade lobster dumplings, as well as some mousse samosas with a homemade caraway tomato soup and Five Brothers grilled cheese. So it's a little amuse to start appetizer. And then we head on over to the Old Loft, where you get this really great 80-year-old mom's pan-fried cod mashed potatoes, like the traditional main course. And that's paired off with an Orvieto white wine. And then you finish off the three-course progressive meal at the Merchant Tavern, where you get to enjoy a homemade Newfoundland-style cheesecake with, I think it's usually a partridge berry top, so mixed berries as well. And that's paired off with your choice of a screech coffee, so a dessert coffee, or you can have a wine, or you can have a beer, whatever you'd like. We do have buses that pick you up, drop you off, so there's no drinking and driving ever needed. So
I can have a second cup of Prosecco. Or
you can, yeah.
You're working with a lot of different restaurants, a lot of different companies there, and it would have taken, I would suppose, a lot of time to sort of negotiate that. How did they react when you came to them with this idea for the food tour?
For the first year, I guess it was just a different idea. So it was really making sure that we weren't getting in the way, but also showing them that this is a profitable marketing business for both of us. So we really worked with them to make sure that we were there at times that they weren't already full. So it was kind of like, you know, shoulder seasons of a park. Well, this is shoulder seasons of a night at a restaurant. So once we tried it out a little bit, they were okay with it, but it was just really making sure that we were a positive addition.
So far, what's the mix in terms of Newfoundlanders versus people from away?
It's starting to grow in interest from Newfoundlanders. Our first year was about 50-50. We had a lot of people coming from the East Coast, St. John's. Yeah. The last 2 years have been a little bit more on the off-island and even international markets. We found that most of our visitors are extremely well-traveled, definitely foodies. I think the price point tends to push people that are truly involved in the food to be on a tour like this. Mm-hmm. We have gotten fishermen. We have gotten local people here. We've got groups. It's quite popular locally here for when you have friends or family come.
Yeah.
And basically a great night out where you don't have to look after the dishes. But we do obviously offer a little bit of a discount for locals as well. I would say about 90% though are from off-island.
Why are they going on the tour? You said they're foodies or whatever. What are the things they say about the experience?
We found that most often our clients are the ones that have been in St. John's and been to Mallard Cottage and Raymond's or been to Fogo and stayed at the inn. So what we've mostly found is this is a place where they're getting into restaurants that they wouldn't have ordinarily necessarily found if they were staying in Rocky Harbor. So that was one side of it. And the second side is they were really finding the personalization of it. You're fully immersed with a local guide that really knows the area, knows stories about it. There's ample opportunities to stop, get some photos, to engage and interact. You get to meet all the chefs in the different restaurants. And then, of course, Mother Nature kind of supplies the rest. Beautiful views, excellent sunset. Those are the sorts of things that money can't buy. We've been featured in quite a few magazines, considered one of the top five food experiences in Atlantic Canada, thanks to Boston Globe and WestJet and others have found us. And I think the culinary scene in Newfoundland has really taken off. So people are looking for that experience, even when they come to places like Gros Morne.
There's a lot of discussion about the fact that we have a number of chefs in this province who are advocates for local food. To what extent is that leading the local food movement here? I'm just wondering what's the spin-off effect beyond just the individuals who go on the tour, do you see?
Well, we've primarily been using Gros Morne Farmer Market. I initially started with them when they started their business plan. They asked me, you know, did I think it was a good idea and so on and so forth. So I've been trying to help help foster that real drive for them. But I know there was a right time and place for those sorts of things. And right now it really resonates with people that it's not about spending $1.50 on a head of lettuce. It's about spending $2.50 and it lasting twice as long or three times as long. They want something that's going to be local. They want to know where it comes from. So when that comes down to fish, when it comes down to game, it's really significant to feature those. And there's a lot of frustration locally that we can't have more of our local game out there. It can't be more accessible, and it can't be found in other forms at a lot of the restaurants.
Do you have a piece of music I should play?
Sherman Downey's first CD was used as the soundtrack to Gross Morn. So when Rebecca would pick somebody up at the airport, she would play that on their journey through the park. And she said, this is just to give you a little bit of a vibe of welcome to the park.
In my soul. Well, I met a girl in Montreal who saved me from my sins, and I thanked her with a kiss and got down to sinning once again. I said, woe is me, I had the right idea, just taking it slow and free. Well, I had the right idea, you just might disagree, but I had the right idea, at least to some degree. Well, I had the right idea. I turned 21 in trouble with a girl I didn't know, and her name was Amarita, and she saved me from the streets, and I thanked her more than once and dirtied up her mama's sheets. Said, woe is me, I had the right idea, just taking it slow and free. Well, I had the right idea, you just might disagree. I had the right idea, at least to some degree. I had the right idea.
Sherman Downey and the Ambiguous Case with their song, The Right Idea. I start this section by asking my guests about their level of optimism about their business and their region.
We, as operators, we're not looking to necessarily be wealthy, but we're looking to be happy and doing a job that we really are passionate about and love, and are able to feature all of our friends and family. And I think, well, the saying is, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I do feel that right now in this area, with new expansion and new people moving in the last 3 to 4 years, young families, as we invigorate people to say, yeah, let's push towards new opportunities, let's foster what people are trying to start.
To what extent will agriculture play a major role in the vitality of rural communities, including this community?
I can start on that one. I mean, I think there's a fine line of balance where it's making money, being sustainable to have your own food local, and then making sure you're not clear-cutting a whole area or having a bunch of effluent blow into the ocean. So it's just being very, very careful. And like Ian had mentioned, there's not a big profit that comes from a lot of farms because it's so much work. But it's advertising that there is a want and a need in the area, and finding these champions in the area like Boyd and Lori that can really push it forward and allow people to enjoy locally sourced and grown agriculture food.
We've come a long way. For example, I moved here in 2010. There was probably 20 people under the age of, I'll say, 35 in the area. Mm-hmm. Everybody else had gone. There was this realization by those that were here. Some worked with Parks Canada, some chose to move here, but everyone else, you know, 85% of the people were on the outswing. We're gone to Fort Mac, we're gone to Ontario, we're gone somewhere else in the world. And that is, unfortunately, the rural mentality of, you got to get out to understand what you're leaving behind. But it's really pivoted in the last 4 or 5 years. And that type of people that are moving here, whether they're retired or they're a young family, most have lived in a big city or a moderate-sized city, be it St. John's, Halifax, Montreal, Toronto, there's a certain expectation that comes with it. That was probably one of the biggest frustrations, was why can't we just get our act together and make these sorts of things happen, whereby we're able to get this food in a better manner. But the thing is, you know, you can't ask a fisherman, hey, would you want to be a farmer now? It's really got to come from passion. So I feel that we are going back to where we were. When I first moved here and saw all the roadside gardens, my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? They still do that here. Wow. And now, yeah, there was a big rush 3-4 years ago. Everyone started putting up greenhouses and putting up raised beds and learning more about the types of seeds that will grow longer, knowing that you can get kale till December now in your backyard. Like, just being more cognizant of that. That at the end of the day, I do think that there's a mind shift. The fishermen realized things were changing in the waters. We've realized things are changing on the landscape. And I think finally we're seeing in the last year or two, people say, if we can start these little sunset opportunities of small pieces of work or businesses that are available for work, then we can have our family come back home. We can have our grandkids come back home. I do think that this is kind of leading the way to see more of that happen.
Can you sometimes think about the cuisine here in Newfoundland and Labrador being similar to like the new Nordic cuisine or Icelandic cuisine and so on? The use of wild foods, of marine, is that part of our niche within Canada?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's Nordic. I'd say it's very Canadian. But what I think we're most aligning ourselves with without really genuinely realizing it is the indigenous food scene.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that I really started to realize over midway through this summer. That I was like, really, we're getting back to some of the basics, some of the hunter-gatherer stuff, you know, from rabbit to moose. And these are the things that maybe our preparation of them have changed it to be a little bit more French or a little bit more of this or whatnot. But I do think that we're going to see a much stronger indigenous feel to our culinary in the next 3 to 4 years. Just watch. I mean, Jeremy Charles is very much about serving things raw and serving things almost like a piece of art done, whereby it's, you know, connected to the plate, to the people, to the place, to the land. And I think that that's going to be definitely a big part of where we go, what they're doing.
Unfortunately, in Newfoundland and Labrador, a lot of people who work in agriculture and food and agritourism, culinary tourism, also have other jobs. How does your other work or your other parts of your life interact with Taste of Gros Morne? Do they complement each other in some way?
We also have our other company, Tor Gros Morne, which is another kind of beast unto itself. And that complements it nicely because we do week-long packages with that. So hiking, culinary, cultural packages tied together for a week. So when you come to do a hike in the park, well, now you obviously have bought into our food tours as well, and you get two of those experiences, so we're able to kind of foster that. But I do think my work in tourism and what I'm exposed to in Canada, the ability through my work with Gros Morne Cooperative Association to be involved in a lot of the best practice missions across the country, really led itself for me to understand where the gaps were, how to fill those gaps, and who to really foster as champions. And that was one of the big things. About 4 years ago, I was really banging my head against the wall. I'm like, we really have tons of opportunity here. We have nobody that's just taking the torch and running with these experiences, namely around culinary, because in Canada, culinary just blew up about 8 or 9 years ago.
And we're not afraid to share ideas. So, you know, if there's something that maybe I want to do, but I hear someone else is doing another business, and I'm like, oh, well, you know what? Maybe they could just do it, and then I don't have to worry about it, right? Like little things like we looked at here at the Old Cottage Hospital, when they started doing that food program, and they got a bunch of funding for different stuff. And I said, well, maybe we'll just come in here and do some work, cook out of the kitchen, and then pay them a rent or whatever it is that they need. And then you kind of help another business. You help each other because, you know, you want everybody to win. So I always make this comment, if you're going to be a leader, I'd rather have a team crossing the finish line than just be me by myself, because it's pretty lonely up there being a winner by yourself and everyone below you. So, you know, bring everybody with you kind of deal. And to your question, I guess about other jobs that kind of complement what we're doing here. For me, I'm working with parks right now, but my goal is to be working in marine conservation. That's my education, that's my background, and that's where hopefully I see long term as a complement to this, is really getting in there fighting for sustainable fisheries and so on, and reducing plastic and marine debris, and it bleeds over into my food tours whether I want it to or not. Like on the Tor Gros Morne side, next year we're hoping to be plastic free, so it's digging in saying,
okay, well, what are we using that, you know, is one use, or what can we buy that will last longer than, say, one season? So it's going towards the metal, and that's what customers want. You know, they're looking for that, and they will pay that extra dollar if you're putting that effort into it. It's marketable, and it's better for the environment.
Well, I was old enough to know better, but I headed to the east. And I stole poor Amorita's heart and I made myself a feast. Well, I sat down to the table and it was beating on my plate. Goddamn, I love a woman who tries so hard to keep me straight. I said, woe is me, I had the right idea, just taking it slow and free. I had the right idea, it's just my disagree.
Downey and the Ambiguous Case, as requested by my guests today, Rebecca Burchett and Ian Stone, operators of Taste of Gros Morne, among other enterprises. In this last section of the interview, we chat more about the need for all entrepreneurs in the region to work together.
If we all work together instead of against each other, which, you know, Newfoundland, we all know, we do not work together very well. So if you open a convenience store, two houses down the road, they'll whack up another convenience store just because they had the same idea and nobody survives. Yeah. So we did really feel that, and I've been really working on this the last year, and I have to really continue to foster it, is getting these new operators into the room to have the discussion, to parlay my information that I learned from my tourism travels and the shows that I attend, and to really parlay that down to the operators so that as they create product or think of new ideas, those can be successful. We're going to see a lot of growth here, but in the right way.
It strikes me that what you're doing here, where you're doing tours, you're integrating all kinds of other people with local expertise, you're creating experiences, but you're talking about how that's spinning off into people who don't take your tours as well, spinning off into an attitude among the business operators. Do you ever think about the larger effects of what you're doing?
I think a lot of that stems from some of the best practice missions that I've done. I've gone to Niagara and I've seen that, and then I've gone to like Prince Edward County, which, you know, they're 5 hours, 6 hours apart, but two very different experiences. And we are much more aligned with something like a Prince Edward County than a Niagara. And, you know, if you look at the national park system, that's like comparing Banff to Gros Morne, right? They're both naturally beautiful. They're an incredible culture, but they're on two different scales and two different interests. I feel that learning from a lot of those operators that might have come from the GTA, from Toronto, and had that dog-eat-dog fight against each other, and then when they got out to Prince Edward County, they realized, okay, so we have to somehow convince all those people from 3 hours up the road and from 3 hours down the road to come here. Yeah, so I thought my name alone would draw people to come here. So now I'm gonna have to work with my neighbor and my other neighbor, and we're gonna have to create some things. And it just fostered that sort of thing. Whereas now here with new operators, I understand they've got bills, they've got things that they're trying to develop. And it's, how do I help you and you not feel that I'm some kind of competitive, right? And initially 2 years ago when I started Tour Gros Morne, and that's how everybody felt, was, oh, here comes the guy that's going to take everybody's product and make money off their backs. And pretty quickly when I started paying other companies to lead some of our hiking tours and give them what I already know is the best guided day rate in the park, they were quickly like, oh, yeah. And that's how we broke down barriers, was by bringing them in to say, hey, I need you to lead a day tour with us because we've got three at the same time. And right? Or hey, if you want, you know, some of your guides to come and do our tour to experience it, come on. I've seen when it goes wrong as well, right? I worked up the coast in forestry when I first started here. I was economic development and forestry, and I watched how they kind of dog eat dog to nothing. So you can continue to do that and cannibalize your market, and or you take an understanding that I'm trying to help.
You know, not every community within Gros Morne is doing necessarily what we're doing. Like, I think it would be great to see it kind of blend over into all the communities. I mean, I can only speak for North Point, Rocky Harbor, and the operators that we work with. But I think if we did more of this collaborative, cooperative style of business making, whether it be in decision making or in a, you know, a small operator, whether it be a restaurant or whatever, if every community did that, or if every council did that, or if every government agency did that, I think you would see a lot of people rising at the same time. We have, you know, Tour and Taste, and, you know, Tour Gros Morne has all these hiking experiences as well as the food, but we offer multi-day adventures. We don't do it though. We source that out. So we could offer it ourselves, and then, you know, when we get one, we could go look for a guide, or we can say, okay, well, he's got all the equipment, he's got the guides, he's done that hike a million times, is probably the best, and who we would want to guide it anyway. So let's just use his company rather than being like, oh, it's ours. Mm-hmm. And no, we don't make as much money, but it's a piece.
He makes money and then he stays.
Right.
And then our friend gets to live.
Right. It's just efficient.
One of the big things why we have to make sure partnerships work is, you know, blatantly obvious. If one of these restaurants fold, we just lost, right? So it was a big risk to take up front. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we're also now invested. So Vince looks to sell Sugar Hill Inn. I need to be proactive in trying to find somebody that I think would be suitable. If they're looking for, you know, Todd wants to switch out his chefs, I need to be proactive in what he fosters to bring it in. So it makes us become more involved, obviously, but it also makes us all as operators look at, you know, what's around and who can we attract to our area that will be a really good fit. And I think that that's a bit of a mind shift, because normally people would be like, it's great if that restaurant closed down because then everybody else gets all the business.
Yeah,
but we can't have that, yeah, being such a seasonal place. We can't exist. I mean, only 2 years ago, we were battling 98% occupancy rates. And, you know, obviously now with Airbnb and unlicensed accommodation starting to ramp up, we've now been able to, okay, adjust that. And we've added about 20% new rooms just last summer alone. So our capacity's increased, which now means we fostered the ability to expand businesses and maybe need another restaurant and so on and so forth. Yeah.
What's your favorite local food?
Local food, if I can get it, locally grown lamb. If I can get it.
Saltwater lamb.
It's so good. That would be my favorite food, local lamb, thing. Local lamb.
How about you?
Moose heart.
Moose heart. How is it prepared?
Stuffed and roasted. Yeah. I never grew up eating moose. I'm a townie, but lived more of my life outside of town than in. And so the first moose that I got, Rebecca stuffed it. It was amazing. Whenever friends are having moose heart, I usually get an invite over to have some. We had some moose the other day. There was an Indigenous tourism forum here, and I was lucky to be part of it. And at lunch, there was moose and pretty much ate half the roast. Everybody at the table was like, oh, it tastes too gamey. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is like medium moose. You know, it's not easy to cook. And he did an incredible job outside the back of the Ocean View Hotel. He built himself a fire, the chef did, and cooked it over the fire. Moose, by far. I'll take it in samosa. I'll take it in any way I can get it. To round it back to the agritourism and agriculture in the area, it's just as hard to get certain vegetables, certain greens, certain things here.
Yeah.
So we have to get back to local, and local tastes so good. So I truly do think that we can make a significant impact by kind of finding all these small industries.
Ian and Rebecca, thanks so much for taking the time. All the best in this season coming
thanks.
Up.
Thank you. Yeah, love to chat more.
Yeah.
That was Ian Stone and Rebecca Bruchette of Taste of Gros Morne and Tour Gros Morne. I'm inspired by the broad vision of using food experiences and access to local food as a way to build a sector and strengthen a region. It is a way to celebrate place. I truly hope that they are right in terms of the current pivot toward community pride and collaboration.
One of the big things why we have to make sure partnerships work is, you know, blatantly obvious. If one of these restaurants fold, we just lost.
We're not afraid to share ideas. So if there's something that maybe I want to do, but I hear someone else is doing another business, and I'm like, oh, well, you know what? Maybe they could just do it, and then I don't have to worry about it.
We've had people comment and say they've eaten their way across the province because they're foodies and whatnot, and have said, you know, this might be their last stop, but have felt that the food here, hands down, can stack up or beat places like Fogo, places like Mallard and Raymond's and whatnot.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was The Right Idea by Sherman Downey and The Ambiguous Case, as suggested by my guests. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was done this week by Steve Bauman. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Imke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
If you open a convenience store, two houses down the road, they'll whack up another convenience store just because they had the same idea and nobody survives.